Hello, friends and folks. Welcome back to the Bald Gun Guy podcast as we play our way through the world of assassination. I'm Six Detmar from Scanlan Media. I'm joined by the bluest of roses, Ryan.
Please call me Klaus.
This is going to be the thing, right? If I don't do a bit, you'll do a bit. And if I do a bit, you won't play along.
That was the only bit I had. My mind is empty otherwise.
Front one in this episode. It's going to be good.
Yeah. Yeah, we're also joined by Ty.
Hello. A.K.A. Haya. I forget which, like, monk here I've been using for the pod so far. It doesn't matter. Hello. Happy to be here.
And we're happy to be in beautiful Morocco. We're in the Red City. We're in Marrakesh as we tackle the Gilded Cage and a house built on sand. Following up this week from our, not this week, it's been more than a month. Sorry, I'm bad at this. Sapienza was a big open map.
Yeah.
Marrakesh, also pretty big and open, but I think a little better directed.
I agree with this.
However, we also picked a very interesting time to tackle Marrakesh.
It's better, it's better, but also.
So just to establish things, we'll talk about them. You know, we'll do Gilded Cage first because it's the main story mission. Then we'll talk a little bit about A House Built on Sand, which we'll not have as much to talk about, obviously. For Gilded Cage, you have two targets. You have Klaus Hugo Strandberg, who is a Swedish banker and a, like, Ponzi scheme criminal who's hiding out in the Swedish embassy after being rescued from basically a prison caravan. And then Reza Zeidan, who is a Moroccan general who, like, orchestrated the prison break and is attempting to sort of, like, stir up public outrage so he can do a coup d'etat. In the background of this, the sort of overarching plot of Hitman 1 continues. The Illuminati are unhappy that someone's murdering them. That's about it.
Yeah, this the story of this felt fairly discreet. At least, like, as I, you know, stepping back, kind of being unfamiliar with the overarching plot, just as we're sort of playing through, right? I was like, What does this mission have to do with anything? I don't know. but it feels very like modular. You know, they could have just kind of plugged it in.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
And so setting out the state of the city, it's a bustling city, you know, like midday, and there's the whole vast marketplace. There's the school that is sort of bombed out and taken over by Zeidan. There's the Swedish consulate where Strandberg is hiding out, and of course, the bankers or crankers man. So I want to talk about the voice acting in this map.
Yeah.
Okay. Before we talk about the voice acting.
Uh-huh.
Okay. I just want to say, just first off, man, it really sucked to have a bunch of violence going on in the Middle East right now and then play this level in which there are protests. And it's just, that was really, it was really uncomfortable for a little bit to play this. I just want to say that.
Yeah.
In terms of the voice acting, so the NPCs in this video game are mostly voiced by Yuri Lowenthal, who is not brown or black, which is most of the NPCs on this map.
Uh-huh. Yeah. Yeah.
Sort of. With a huge asterisk, but I'll get to
with
that.
Some exceptions. Now, there's something I'm pulling up because I want to get it right. General Zeidan has a separate voice actor, and it is someone famous. Do we have any guesses?
I have no clue.
That's great, because I showed you.
What?
So, General Zeidan is voiced by Jason Isaacs.
Oh, yeah, you did show me.
Of Harry Potter fame. Shoutouts to Camille. I'm sorry, shout outs to Rick on the Abnormal Mapping Discord for pointing that out. And Camille. But
yeah, I forgot.
So on one hand, you could make the excuse that, you know, it's small team, maybe. Maybe they didn't have time to cast people. I don't know. But no. They got fucking Jason Isaacs to do the general. And it's just... Ah, man. I've played this level before. Way back when it came out. Or whenever I played Hitman 1. And I thought it was kind of rough then. And then just the time period we're playing this in of like things escalating made the flaws of it just escalate 10 times more. So
I don't at all disagree with you, right? And I really think like the one person you're going to go out of your way to get is you're going to cast this Moroccan general as this fucking like classical British actor. That sucks a lot. And I don't say this next part to excuse anything. Personally, I was able to detach a little bit just because of how funny it was to me to have Yosuke from Persona 4 on every corner shouting shit.
Yeah.
It's still bad, but it's so ridiculous that I was able to compartmentalize a little bit.
Yeah,
I was going to say sort of like, for me, one of the appeals of, you know, video games in general and something structured like Hitman is, you know, the kind of like basic ability to visit locations that I, you know, can't or wouldn't, you know, be able to visit in real life, right? For various reasons, right? I'm never going to be a Paris fashionista, whatever, right? So I'm not going to be on that beat. I'm never going to get to see the inside of that. And likewise, although, you know, Morocco is probably best of all of the North African countries, like, it's still not a place that I could comfortably visit, if at all, depending, you know, on things, right? And so it was a little bit, like, of a bummer for me, you know, to see, like, essentially just, like, the random, like, you know, most of the models are, you know, just kind of white people in general, but yeah. Even specifically like the stylings, right? Like there's not a hijab like to be seen. And it's just kind of like there are even just kind of like basic like visual signifiers that you're, you know, in a place are sort of absent there. I feel like it took me out more than it normally would. Now, I understand things like that are, you know, tremendously intensive in terms of development resources. I'm not just saying, oh, they should have just, you know, spent more money and put it in. But it really shows in a place like Marrakesh, right? Like, and I have, like, some, I guess, greater personal investment in this because, like, some of my family, you know, is from not Marrakesh specifically, but Morocco. And you know, like I can't go back, so I would love to, you know, like, you know, explore a sort of fictionalized version of a place like that. But it doesn't really scratch that itch for me.
And ducking down to House Built on Sand for just a second, it feels like they poke knowing fun at it at a certain point, because one of the targets, is this, you know, like this Frenchman who's come to Morocco for a business deal. And there's a like mission story around him wanting to find a fortune teller, and there's a local who he asks who's like what the fuck, man, you came to Morocco to see a fortune teller, what the fuck is wrong with you, white boy? But you kind of don't get to do that when you've done this map the way you have.
Yeah, especially when it's like a challenge to dress up as the fortune teller.
Yeah.
The big criticism for me for this level is that, like, the conceit of Hitman is somewhat the comedy of dressing up as different roles and acting out different scenarios. Mm-hmm. But the moment you tell me to... Well, not tell me. The moment you give me some missions that are like, hey, you should knock out this fake resistance member and, you know, put on the the headdress and the outfit and disguise, blend yourself in with these very clearly like other people who don't 100% side with Zedan, but you know, they're there and they're notably not white. It just doesn't hit. It just doesn't work. It doesn't work, guys. Please.
Yeah. Yeah, it's rough. And I think it's like, I haven't done any of the future Hitman levels like as deep an analysis as I do for this podcast. I feel like going forward, we're going to get to see them handle this a little differently in ways that I think are better. But maybe when we actually come time to do that episode and I do the deep analysis, I'll be like, oh, wait, nope, I was wrong.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, that is the one thing I just remembered. It's just that specific, like the flyer guy disguise. I'm just like, can't wait to get here.
Yeah, it's also, sorry, I've been thinking about the Jason Isaacs thing, because I'm like, I don't know, I was like, still, dude, I'm not terribly familiar with this guy, but I do find it weird, because like, you know, I don't think it's like, I feel I'm put in this uncomfortable position, right, where you're like, well, you know, like the putting like just a full like 100% like Jewish guy in that role, right? Well, it's the Middle East, right? But there's such a huge community of like Amazigh and Moroccan in general expats in Western Europe that it's like there's no reason why they couldn't have just gotten, you know, like an actual like Moroccan person. You know, it's not like this, like, you know, sort of like inaccessible, population group or like, yeah, you know, national expat group. But yeah, it's just kind of, I also, I guess like this might be a good, point. I feel like the, we have to, you know, as we're talking about, you know, like Hitman in terms of like politics and race and things like that, like, you know, we might have to like tweak our sort of toolkit a little bit, like, because if we're talking about like MENA, you know, like our sort of notions of like race and stuff don't exactly map on so cleanly and consistently. But yeah, we'll, to the extent that we'll continue to talk about that, we'll just kind of adjust as we go along. But.
Yeah, and to add on to that too, like, it's not like General Zedan is like, yo, we have to get Jason Isaacs for this role. It's just like, he's just kind of just a dude. So I don't understand this like stunt casting.
Yeah, I honestly feel like I wouldn't, if you told me that he was also Yuri Lowenthal, I'd be like, oh, okay.
yeah, it's very bizarre.
And I don't remember a ton of like moments where I'm like, damn, I'm glad I stood around and waited for him to this monologue to this character. Really,
I mean, I was glad he stood in monologue so I could kick a toilet onto his head, but
that was great. Yeah,
that was pretty good. So as far as like the gameplay of this map, yeah, I mentioned it, but it is not as big as Sapienza, but still a pretty big map. But I feel like the fact that the targets are split across the map and there's like interesting stuff in between them makes such a difference.
Yep.
You are encouraged to actually engage with the map, whereas in Sapienza, it's like you were encouraged to head to the mansion and forget that the rest of the map exists.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and it's fun because both the characters are in on the premise of the thing, whereas Sapienza, like she doesn't, she's spying on the guy, and you're the only one who really knows this, whatever. Mm-hmm. And there's just more room to mess with the narrative when, you know, you can get into each person's safe and then say the code word and then have a meet up in the middle of the tunnel. Like, that's just way more fun to mess with than, you know, go to the mansion every time.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. In terms of like utilizing like map resources, I'm a really, really big fan of the Shisha like cafe bar.
Yeah.
Because it takes up like a decent chunk of the, like, there's kind of, you know, if we're generalizing, like a third area, we have the school, the consulate, and then the like bazaar / like cafe area, right? The cafe is a pretty big chunk of that. But even within it, right, we have like the two, like the partition, the VIP area, and then like the standard, you know, thing. And then there are so many different, like, you know, one unique disguise there with the camera dude. There's the elite. I forget if it's an elite soldier uniform or just a normal soldier uniform. I think it's elite. There's that guy there. There's just like a lot of sort of like points of engagement in that, like, strictly speaking, like the only optional section of the map, right? And that's something I really enjoy, like, in addition to, you know, what y'all have already sort of mentioned.
There's even like drain pipe, like climbing access to the bathroom, mm-hmm. in a way that's really interesting. It's just like they pack so many options into that, which is, I think, why they end up making it so central later on to House Built on Sand, is because, yeah. they realize they've created such a good area.
Yep.
On the other end of things, I feel like the consulate isn't great.
The consulate is infuriating on, what's the, is it master difficulty, the highest one? I forget. Yeah, master.
Something like that.
Yeah, it's so annoying. Oh my goodness. There's a element of it that I like in theory, but then in practice, it I guess does exactly what you would expect, but it's somehow really annoying to play. So I like that the most, like, some of the most powerful disguises that aren't unique, like not the masseuse or whatever, in the consulate are the non-combat roles. Because normally the gig is like you get the elite soldier uniform or whatever, and then you basically have free reign to go wherever. That's like a fairly common, like, you know, just flow thing in in other Hitman levels. Where with this, the like embassy intern gives you a lot fewer. What do they call the guards?
The enforcers?
Like, enforcers, yeah. Sorry, I was like, captains? No, that's Destiny. Yeah, enforcers. There are way fewer enforcers with, like, the, you know, the non-gun-carrying, non-combat disguises. And that's something that is cool. But also just having, like, I don't know, every security guard be an enforcer for, you know, when you're in a, when you're in the elite soldier uniform is just... it's like slightly excessive, and it gets, you get some pretty ridiculous, like, pathing repeat loops if you are adamant about staying in, like, a, you know, security guard or soldier uniform, something like that.
The intern outfit drove me fucking crazy.
Wait, why?
Because all the challenges mentioned that there's this intern outfit. I didn't look up where to find it. It turns out he's just milling around the bazaar. So I went in there, and I was, like, saving and loading and saving and loading, like, knocking out random people, often in plain sight, being like, which one of you motherfuckers is the fucking intern? You can't put on anybody's fucking clothes in that entire goddamn building.
Yeah.
I spent, like, 30 minutes looking around for him, and I was like, nah, fuck this. Let me just Google it.
I literally shot or punched every single person in that building. And I was like, what the fuck is going on? There's no such thing as an intern. This is fake. Maybe it's one of the starts. It must be one of the starts. It's not one of the starts. What is happening?
He's got a red tie.
Just losing it.
Just pick up the purse. Yeah. Getting the intern disguise was hard for me because I couldn't poison the water because everybody would be like, yo, what the fuck are you doing?
You gotta get that waiter disguise. Yeah, you gotta poison anything.
Yeah, so I had the same issue where that I've complained about in the past, I believe, where my entire progress for the level reset because there's some kind of like content access, like Steam glitch that's going on. Same reason I don't have access to the patient zero, I'm assuming. Anyway, so even though I've played the heck out of this level, it's one of my favorite levels. But I didn't have anything. So one of the first unlocks in the level mastery is the waiter uniform. And so just by default for a few runs, I didn't have the, you know, the intern or the elite soldier in the school or anything. So I ended up playing as the waiter quite a bit, just doing my playthroughs for the pod. So I didn't have to worry about things like that. Yeah. Yeah, I guess that's maybe a good like segue to the broader point of I just like because there's so much to do, for instance, in the cafe, it really feels satisfying to, you know, put on the waiter disguise and be able to, you know, just kind of advance all of these, you know, whatever route you want to take with the cameraman or the intern or whatever. It's one of the it's like a particularly satisfying, like disguise area combo, in my humble opinion.
Well, I missed that. So what I did was just like, all right, intern's going to the bathroom. There's also a cop in the bathroom. All right, I'm a save, and I'm gonna see the fastest way to just kill everybody, in the bathroom, and just hope nobody notices.
Yeah, I understand. I had, you know, had some of those moments myself. Okay, we got to talk about the Bankers Crankers guy in a minute, but
Jesus fucking Christ.
While we're on the subject of waiters, the weirdest challenge on this map is there's a challenge called Poison Ivy, where you
fucking good. It's so weird.
It's so you poison General Zidane's food, and then he eats it and he dies. Except for his food is just a random plate in a random building on the map, and then you head to a different random point and wake up a random waiter, and he delivers this plate. Yeah. It's so weird.
I love it. I love it so much. At first, I was like, "What the fuck you do? Like, what is this?" I looked it up, and I did it, and I was like, that's actually, like, really cool. Because, I don't know, there's something, like, if you're going to make a big Clockwork World, you might as well fucking use it. Like, put a random dish in this restaurant, put a random asleep waiter somewhere else, and just, like, watch the fucking hand, like, go across the fucking wheel. Like,
just at least make it a to-go container or something. It's just this random
fucking
plate. That's
very fair. That is very fair.
Though it is very funny, like, it takes so long.
It takes so long.
That I poisoned it, and I woke the guy up, and then I went to go do something else, and I saved. And I kept, like, saving and loading that same save and doing shit so many times, I completely forgot. And I killed Strandberg. And I was like, okay, now what the fuck do I do about Zayden? And the picture-in-picture pops up, and he drops dead. I'm like, oh, right!
It's so good.
It's pretty funny.
What did y'all think about the Julian Assange character? I just thought it was.
That's my thought.
Yeah.
I don't know. It's whatever.
Yeah. No, I don't believe there's anything you can do with the character. It's just like it's just a kind of joke. Is that correct? Yeah.
Which one is this?
In the second floor of the consulate, in the there's like the open where the interview happens, in the control room. Then the massage room, and then if you keep going in that direction, there's like an open, like multi-cubicle kind of office area, and there's a security guard and Julian Assange like stand-in who have a sort of comical exchange.
I did not encounter this, so I don't know.
Okay, yeah. No, it's not very interesting. It's just this like thing that you kind of stumble into. I was like, oh, okay. But there's also a keyboard. What is it? A keyboard cat in the dialogue.
Okay,
there's a reference to that, right? And I'm like, this is very strange because I feel like of all the kind of like contemporary references in Hitman, there like the Assange like narrative like moved, you know, somewhat as far, you know, as far as like general public opinion and stuff like that. Like it was less stable. And then there's also a reference to like, I don't even know what they're talking about, but I'm assuming like a specific meme right? That was also probably very sort of ephemeral in its relevance. And so I thought that was like interesting. It's like they packed all of the things that weren't going to age well or that could potentially age as intended into like the same like dialogue bit. And yeah, it was just kind of funny.
So a lot of my experience with this map was defined by some early DMs with Ryan around the phrase bankers are crankers. Ryan, can you explain yourself?
Please, it's cankers. Thank you.
I know, but you thought it was crankers.
But I did think it was crankers. Because I have a sane mind. No, I'm just... Okay. I don't know. I play this level an amount of times before I sent a DM and was like, yo, this fucking dude sucks. Okay, here's what tips it over. So there's the guy on the speakerphone. He's going through. I wrote down some of the stuff he says because it's really funny to me. And okay, so he's speaking, he's like, let your outrage be heard all the way to the fat cats in the government. Boo! Whose side are you on, General Zayden? Where do you point your gun? Also, they all say Zayden, which is okay. Where do you point your guns? At the system or the people? Come out and face the music, Mr. Strandberg. Don't do the crime if you can't do the time. Bankers are cankers. Say it with me. Bankers are cankers. I'm like, what is going on? You just hear it constantly if you're in that area. And it just loops. I don't know what's happening. And then the thing that really solidified it for me is going in the tunnel and having the guard be like, bankers are cankers. That's kind of catchy. Like,
what is happening? Yeah, it's, I don't know, part of me, it was particularly amusing, I guess, just because it's the type of, I don't know, like, cringe leftoid that tends to find his way in, you know, behind a megaphone. At a protest,
but
it was just sort of a, you know, obviously it's like an explicit parody, but it brought back some memories is all I'm gonna say. one thing I will say though is that there's this funny line as like part of his little loop, which again is not very long, if you spend any time in the area, is he references specifically like moving beyond the failed ideologies of the 20th yes. century.
I was gonna bring
and I feel like it's great. It's a great line because like it's ultimately there are like a few different like groups of people politically that say that, right? But it's fundamentally like a sort of liberal or sort of like post-liberal sort of like end of history perspective, right? Like leftists don't say that, right? Because like if you're you know, a communist or whatever, you're in no hurry to, you know, bring up the, you know, collapse of the Soviet Union. Kind of discrediting of communism. Yeah.
Sorry. I have the quote. Can I say the quote?
Please.
All right. He says, it is time for a third way, real socioeconomic progress that rejects the failed political dogmas of the 20th century. Klaus Strandberg is teaching us a lesson. They teach us to say no to greed and build a fairer, more egalitarian monetary system. What rallies are you going to where they say that?
Well, none. I mean, well, because...
Homie.
Yeah. Well, what I find weird, right, is you can't really mention a third way and then also the failed ideologies of the 20th century, right? Because third way is that exact language is specifically referencing, like, you know, various forms of phalangism or just, you know, fascism generally, right? Yeah. But then, you know, there are a few failed ideologies of the 20th century, right? But the third way is generally considered one of them, right? It's just this odd thing, right? And like that got me writing like headcanon for it. Like, is this guy like is he like a really ignorant like you know, a deep cover advocate for, you know, just the kind of you know, totalitarian, you know, coup d'etat that's about to happen, or like whatever, like what's going on with this guy.
I actually, for complicated reasons we're about to get into, I hadn't paid much attention to the guy. I listened for Bankers or Crankers and was disappointed. And then I was nearby getting ready to like ambush a guard. I like was going to do the like the silent kill with the pistol in your hand. So you hit the button and just shoots him twice in the chest and pulls him down. And I was sneaking up and then I heard it's time for a third way. And I paused. I was like, the fuck is going on over there? And the reason I was doing this is because one of the challenges in this map is bugged in an interesting way. So on May 10th, we got the patch for the Season of Pride for Hitman 3.
Okay.
Which is part of their Seven Deadly Sins thing, which we'll get to talk about someday. I have thoughts, but I'm not allowed to share them yet.
Why is it called the Season of Pride?
Because they have special escalations based on the Seven Deadly Sins, and this one's based on Pride.
Okay, so just a bad timing across the board then.
Yep. okay. Anyway, they made some different changes to try and they've been trying to tweak things because obviously they made some engine changes with Hitman 3 and that broke some things. And one of the changes they made was they were having an issue with NPCs reacting to emetic poison oddly, where they would head to trash cans and stuff when normally, like in Hitman 1 and 2, they would head for a toilet. And so they made a change to make them prioritize toilets. And it turns out this breaks slightly. I mean, it's still doable, but it breaks a challenge where you're supposed to subdue the speaker, the megaphone guy, because you poison his water bottle and then he's supposed to sort of stumble to a back alley and vomit and then you throw him into a dumpster. He doesn't do that now. What he does is he drinks the water, he sets down his megaphone, and he just walks into the consulate. He doesn't stop. Nobody tries to stop him. He's been sitting there shouting about how it's the worst thing in the world, and then he just walks right past these guards. They don't pat him down, nothing. He walks right out of their bathroom and just starts barfing in their toilet. And that makes it very hard to hide the body.
That is so funny.
I mean, again, there's something that sort of rings true about that, right?
Yeah,
like,
totally.
How many demos have we been at where, you know, people are like, you know, we gotta smash capitalism, you know, like, you know, the 1% get the wall or whatever. And then it's like, okay, you know, you gotta piss. And then you go into the Starbucks bathroom.
Exactly. Exactly.
So it's like very on point. I don't know if like those little like flourishes are intentional. I mean, that one clearly not, right? Because it's explicitly bugged, but it's just like, whoop. Okay.
Yeah, no, that's the thing I was thinking about. I was like, no, yeah, this is the thing, is if push came to shove, he would be like, hey, can I use your bathroom? And they would say yes.
Yeah.
Absolutely. He's not really the oppressed here. yeah. So in order to institute that, I had to do a run. So I think this is a change to Hitman 3. I don't think this used to happen in Hitman 1, where if you're suspicious or higher, you can't save.
That's definitely new. I'm pretty sure.
I'm pretty sure that's new, which made it very hard because basically in order to achieve my goal of knocking this guy out and then stashing his body, I had to gun down the entire consulate, and that took a few runs. That was my own little roguelike, because there are not a lot of. I finally found a door or a room where there were still two doors, but they were both sort of in the same general corner, and so I wasn't nonstop flanked. And then I just sort of, you know, took them all down, but. There was a lot of me just, like, trying to sprint through the hallways for cover, hiding behind copy machines and, you know, dumping with pistols. Also, a lot of people being like, hey, please don't shoot me. And I'm like, listen, it's nothing personal. I just need to put this guy's body in a dumpster.
Sorry, it's the engine. Like, what can I say?
Yeah, you know, listen, yeah. Society.
So you live in a society.
I know, any other notes on sort of like the basic like story and structure of this map? Feels really good to snap that guy's neck as the masseuse.
It's pretty good.
Yeah, you can keep that massage going for way too long. Also, so I encountered this bug, and I unfortunately, like, I didn't realize what was happening when I was doing the masseuse kill. I just thought it was, like, a weird thing, and I only, when I was playing later and unrelated, just doing a silent takedown, realized, like, what I was triggering. So I'm assuming it will work for the neck snapping as well as the, like, pacify. So if you are in the middle of a, like, yeah, like a... at least a silent takedown, but I think like a neck snap as well. And then you engage your, I don't know, your hitman senses. You hold control, you know, you see through walls. It will infinite loop the action, but like the rest of the world continues, right? So basically like you can be just like struggling with the person for like 5 minutes, right? Or however long you want. And I mean, there's no benefit to this. It's exclusively like to your detriment, right? Because someone walks in or whatever. But it happened to be when I was doing like the specific, like the kill as the masseuse. And I was like, you know, I was just doing that like kind of neurotic, like, oh, make sure the room's clear and all this stuff. And I just like wasn't finishing. And I was like, what? And then I released and it happened. But yeah, it's just, you can hold it forever, at least for the non-lethal stuff. Yeah.
I wonder, I mean, that it used to be the case that you could do, in Hitman 1, you could do that, and you didn't need Hitman Vision or anything. If you started a choke, you could just set down the controller. You didn't need to do anything, and it would just, it would just loop forever until you got caught. They would never break out of it. So I guess that got changed at some point, but through using Hitman Vision, you managed to access that old feature.
It was just amazing. Nothing substantial.
Mm-hmm. I feel like the only other like mission story that I feel like I wanted to talk about was the there's the one with the prisoner in the school. So one of Zaydan's troops and a former friend of his brother was injured in one of these raids, and also he objects to the coup d'etat, so he got all tied up, and you can disguise as him and then headbutt Zaydan to death, which is a dumb way to kill someone. It's the worst disguise on the map because you're always suspicious. Unless you're sitting in that chair, everyone, even civilians, think it's you're up to shit. So,
yeah, I did one of my like ultra-violent runs actually, with that disguise, just to throw people off, you know.
Like, oh yeah, they never see it coming.
Yeah. See if you can kind of upset the political situation happening a little bit more, you know. Mm-hmm. Zaydan was right, you know, he identified like the true enemies of the nation, but you know, it's too late for him.
Yeah. There's a go ahead.
The first time I did this, I guess my first kill didn't go so great, so I was too suspicious, so I could wear the disguise, but I couldn't sit in the chair. And so while Zaydan will notice that something is missing, he won't read me as the prisoner. And so I had to go back and do it again. But it was funny.
That's pretty funny. I also had fun. I don't know if this is a bug. It's just sort of how this shit works. But there's a challenge to dump a bunch of bodies in the well. And I did that and then saved. And I ended up using that save a lot. Just sort of because it was at a convenient spot. And every time I loaded it, it would spawn in the bodies and they would just like drop like raindrops into the well and like bounce all over the place. It was pretty funny.
That's so good.
So that's good.
Just again, as kind of like the random et cetera, like generally for the map before we like move on to more specifics. Normally I don't care about whatever like contrivance is required for the like environmental distractions or hazards, but there's something about everyone's like again, like obsession with making sure that all the oil lamps are lit at all times in the middle of the day. I'm like, y'all need to chill. Like, what are you doing? Like, this room is perfectly adequately lit. Like,
I was trying to get the challenge for blowing up Zaydan in his room. And I did it at first. I'd loosened the wrench, but I didn't turn off the lamp. And I was like, what's going on? Why isn't it activating? What's? It's because I didn't turn off the lamp. So I go in, and I go in, I reload, I go in again. But this time, I don't know what happened. I did the wrench. I did the lamp. I must have forgot. Or okay. I was trying to redo a trigger or something. I just turned on the lamp again and died.
Reminds me of the first time I used a proxy explosive in this game. Yes. Where I placed it and I was like, this thing even fucking work?
But it was funny too because there's the guard next to the door. And he saw me and he was like, what are you doing? I just blew up.
Great question, sir.
For the record, again, before we move on, so I instinctively will always take the miniaturized explosive devices if I'm doing like a challenge or something like that, just so I don't know, I can use it without having to worry about like this or that. If I hit the wrong button, just drop it randomly. So it turns out, I had in the back of my mind, right, like that the explosion is slightly smaller from the smaller mines, right? But I'm like, it doesn't say it in the description. I'm like, maybe I'm just like making this up, whatever. So it turns out that the micro explosive or whatever doesn't actually explode with a large enough radius to kill our banker friend when placed in the camera.
Oh.
It worked out in my favor because again, I had to re-unlock, like I had to redo all the achievements and stuff, so it didn't kill him. Then I just went upstairs and dropped the moose on him, so it was fine. Like I got the prime time and the moose thing all in one run. But yeah, it was just, they were just standing there like befuddled that the camera had just exploded, but it didn't kill him or anyone else. Yeah,
good shit.
The first time when I did the moose challenge, I mean, I of course did the story mission. I saw the moose and I was like, ah, fuck it. Just pull out the gun, shoot the moose, reload. But yep, that's done.
Yeah, I did that too, but I had the silenced pistol with the subsonic ammo, so no one even noticed. It was great.
Yeah, the motif, right? The running moose motif on the wall. On the second, I think it's just on the second floor. Maybe I'm wrong.
Oh, yeah.
They make it really hard not to drop the moose on them. Like once you're there, right? You're like, you know, okay, what am I gonna do if you don't have anything specific in mind? The game is like, hey, the moose. You know,
give him the moose. Yeah, good stuff.
So what were you gonna move on to?
We have some options here. I was thinking maybe we'd move on to House Built on Sand, unless we have some other stuff to touch on in Gilded Cage.
I do. Yo, did y'all do that dancing Easter egg?
No. No, I saw that a challenge, and I saw that it was one of the ones that didn't say what it was. And I was like, okay, see, yeah. Whatever. I'm not going to.
Yeah. Ty, did you do it?
I did not.
Okay, so...
I feel like I have done it. You know, it's one of those things, but I wasn't going to renew every challenge for this. I'm sorry.
So for this one, you dress up as the elite and you dismiss every guard on the top floor and whatever ones are on the bottom that you can dismiss. And then a stereo appears in the intercom room. And so you turn on the speaker, you turn on the intercom, turn on the speaker. And then everybody gets dismissed in the, it's in the alley. So everybody goes there. And then General Zaydon like walks downstairs into the alley. He steps on like one of the weapons crates and also starts dancing. Everybody's dancing. And Zaydon also starts dancing. And then you can kill him while he's dancing to get that challenge. It was fun though.
Ha, huh, I should do that. That sounds fun.
That rules. Yeah. I just, as maybe, again, it's like a good remark. So, the what Ryan called the elite, right? The officer uniform, the red beret, right? Mm-hmm. I did appreciate how generally challenging it is to obtain that disguise. Yeah. It's just like a frequent kind of it's a weird thing to complain about, like something being accessible, but I feel like the, as I said, like the elite, like military or security uniforms are generally like just too omnipresent in the levels because they just afford such a tremendous degree of access once you equip them that it kind of, you know, it tends to like funnel you into like that as part of a repeatable strategy. So I like the fact that they're a bit tricky to obtain, assuming you want to, you know, keep your silent assassin and all of that.
Shout outs to the guard in front of Zaydon's office. I just use the coins every time, but occasionally he would see me do the coin and it would kill my run. And shout out to that guy.
Yeah, he fell for so many toy tanks. Just every time, that guy. He's just, his kid is going to be happy. I hope he has like a little boy at home, you know. Just, yeah, like 14 of those tanks.
My strat for getting in that room was like, you know, turning on the vacuum, knocking out the guy in front of the vacuum, and then, you know, from the corner, just like throwing a coin, and then when he looks away, just run into the room.
Yeah.
Works every time.
Yeah. I usually didn't even bother knocking him out. I just waited for the other hallway guard to pat, or there's two, right? So they pat, you pull with the, you know, distraction, the vacuum, and then just, you know, throw whatever your thing is, just because there's no dumpster or closet or anything to put that guard. You can put them just like down kind of on the landing, but out of sight, but I'm uncomfortable with that generally. So yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
it's not too bad.
Also, the strat that I'm probably going to use going forward, I always had a save in the turning on the turret gun to kill both of them one. We like have to find a key in the underground, and you know, you call Klaus over to Zaydon, I think. And then you can activate the big like tank that's near them. And I had a save at that point. So whenever I would just do challenges to like cash them in, I would just load up that save and then just walk out of the map.
That's clutch.
So I think I'm just going to do that going forward you know, whenever I can save towards the end of the level, it'll make doing this so much easier.
Yeah.
It's a very hot strat.
That's a pro tip.
Yeah. Pro tip for anybody playing along, I guess. And like doing all the challenges and stuff. Because I wanted to get 20 for the silenced assault rifle. Because I vaguely remember needing an assault rifle for Colorado. But it just seemed useful to have, so.
Well, you'll get to use it sooner rather than later.
I think, yeah, as I think the only person who likes Colorado on the planet, it's like every month we're inching closer to just pure carnage, so.
I like Colorado.
Oh, okay, I thought you were...
No, okay. Never
mind. We'll talk about Colorado when we talk about Colorado.
Colorado's fun. Colorado has it does have some problems, but I think it's a fun map. But we're moving on to a house built on sand. This is the prequel mission. This is two targets: Kong Tuo Kwong and Matthew Mandola. Apologies if I'm messing up some of those pronunciations. Basically, a construction company, Hamilton Lowe, is trying to take out a rival and also an employee of theirs that's leaking secret documents to the rival. Noteworthy that Hamilton Lowe is also the contractor of Gilded Cage. So in case you thought that we were finally getting into, like, oh, this is where Hitman starts being about, like, yeah, kill the rich and even vaguely progressive politics, the reason you're killing them is because if Zaydan's coup succeeds, Hamilton Lowe will lose its contracts with the Moroccan government. So that's fun. But yeah, this is one of the things I like about House Built on Sand is I like that it's not like we had that mission in Sapienza where you're taking out the politician, right? Mm-hmm. And that one was like, you know, like oh man, this actually ties into, you know, the guy you're going to kill next time is your, you know, employer. And oh, isn't this ironic? And this one is just like, no, this is just a regular job. And I kind of like the feel of it being this like workaday ICA contract as opposed to sort of the big meaningful shit, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
this
is just 9 to 5, you know?
Yeah.
Kill another guy.
Yeah. Sorry. I like, now you're good. I like this level because you can poison a hookah and it's fantastic.
You can poison a hookah. That's good.
It's so good because he, and you know, we've all been there. I've been to bad hookah places in college, but you know, he takes a hit. He stands up. He does like a dance. He just falls over, dies. It's great.
Yeah, so I thank you for reminding me of that, right? Like, I had this moment where I'm like, okay, if we have pills that can, like, dissolve instantly in liquid, which we know, and then the hookah shows us can be vaporized, right? These things are so versatile. What are we doing killing people? We need to just patent this, right? And sell this to, like, Pfizer or whatever. And we're set, right? We're going to make way more money. You know, what getting them to, you know, we're going to get like a cut for every bottle of, you know, Tylenol or whatever, right? That is,
it might be easier to dissolve murder juice than helpful things.
I don't know. I'm not a murder juice expert. I can't comment on this. Sorry, just an aside. But just because the animation, you know, is the same and all of that. I was like, wow, these things are dang versatile.
I've had my fair share of energy drinks, so I am a murder juice expert. And it's harder than you think. I mean, murder juice, it makes things a lot easier. It's the guarana, really.
One thing I like about this is I enjoyed the little rooftop interaction with the, you know, the carpet seller. Only, you know, your strongest carpet. Yeah, I just because there was something, I mean, it's played as a joke, but the whole, in the default mission, right? It's just, oh yeah, I want some of these, I'm a rich tourist, and okay, come back in 10 minutes, right? Like, multiple shopkeepers use the same, like, fairly limited, like, little, like, dialogue bit, and that's that, right? So being able to actually, like, see some engagement with, like, oh, you know, going up, and, but, you know, just that, I don't know, it was just, like, something that I felt like it kind of delivered or like made use of resources that were present but not utilized in the original.
Also, it's nice to see this like out of town or dumbass get fleeced.
Yeah.
Because he's up. If you go up there and listen to some of the dialogue, he's looking at these carpets and he's like, "Oh, this one looks really good, but like, they kind of has this bad stitch here." And the seller's like, "Ah, you have a good eye. That is the traditional bad stitch that we always do for good luck." And he's like, "Oh, okay." it's pretty funny. I also like that you like. I was having trouble getting up there at first. I had a couple of runs where I did some suspicious shit to get up there. But if you show up dressed as a bodyguard, the lady will just be like, "You must be his friend. I'll let you up." Which I think is pretty funny.
Yeah, so I'm to this day unsure if this is, because the thing you mentioned, right, about the imperfect stitch. So I've heard that this is, you know, very much like a legitimate thing, blah, blah, blah. But then I've also heard that this is not, that this is like, this is a made up, you know, whatever. Do we have like a definitive answer to that?
I don't know. I don't know. I assumed it was getting one over on the tourist. But
yeah, so the classic thing is, right, like that, you know, perfection, you know, in creating something is the provenance of the divine, right? And so as a, you know, basically like, you know, sort of performance or acknowledgement of the separation between man and the divine, and the sort of like different roles and capacities that we have in the act of creation, that they would, you know, like, make an intentional quote-unquote mistake as kind of that like persistent acknowledgement. And you see mostly that you see this cited as just like a thing that is true, but I remember like looking and I'm like, is this like actually like a legitimate thing? And it wasn't totally clear, but it's a oft repeated meme. Even if it ends up not being true, I would say like the majority of people who are aware of this at all, like, believe this to be true. You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Okay. That's an interesting detail. I don't think we'll ever get to the bottom of it, really.
Yeah. But. And what's weird, what's funny about it is that, like, you know, most, like, you know, rugs that we're talking about are so kind of, like, overwhelmingly just, like, complex. That, like, I don't know, the idea that this guy just, like, zeroes in on, like, again, like a, you know, kind of single, like, stitch that's, you know, like, out of place or whatever is, like, it is amusing to me. Like, this guy is just a savant. Like, again, he's in the wrong business, right? Anyway.
Well, he's especially on the wrong business after I fucking murdered him.
Oh, he just got the wrench from me, man. You're violent.
Yeah. That's true. I am.
Okay. I don't know if it was just me, but when I read the challenge to kill the dude with the crystal ball, I thought it meant the crystal ball that's in the level. I felt like that was a reasonable assumption. But no. I had to get level 20. I'm like, I'm not doing this challenge. Thank you.
Oh, goodbye. Yeah. It is. Wait. No, it is the crystal ball in the level.
I couldn't pick it up.
No, that's not how you do it.
How do you do it?
If you do the fortune teller opportunity, and he sits down and he asks you for his fortune, there's just like a kill prompt, and as part of like the cinematic, you pick up the crystal ball and bash him with it and stuff. And yep. you get the challenge.
I was going to say, I do not think I ever got level 20 mastery on this level, but I know I've done it for sure. Yeah. Mm.
Mm. All right. Guess I just missed that prompt then. That definitely did all that weird.
Yeah.
Also, so what's the best disguise to get into the cafe? Because I had trouble with that one.
I mean, just bodyguard.
Okay.
Just bodyguard and go in the back door.
How do you get to the back door?
You just walk around. It's just on just opposite where the main entrance is. There's a little side door, and you can pick it or you can get a key for it.
Here's what I did.
Okay.
I killed the guard. I wore the guard.
Uh-huh.
I walked through the front door.
Uh-huh.
And I'm like, all right, I'm going to hide behind some furniture. Please don't notice me, lady. And she notices me. And I'm like, shit. Sorry about this. I knock her out. And I go in. Straight in. And I kill the guy.
Whenever I didn't feel...
Not kill the guy, I get his, like, thing. But
yeah. Whenever I don't feel like... Whenever I didn't feel like doing the whole, like, going up to the carpet roof to get the key properly, what I would do is I would run up to that back door, I would pick the lock, I would get seen, and someone be like, hey, what are you doing? And I just walk away, you turn and come back, and they'd have forgotten about me.
Yeah, that's really it's really convenient because you can do that, you can get in, and basically that gives you access to, because you can pull people into the little, like, staff room there, so you can very easily get a bodyguard uniform by going in there, and then that allows you to go interact with the defector architect guy and lead him to, you know, or quote, you just the prompt, right? So you get him to follow you, go into there, and you can just kill him there, discreetly, take the, you know, blah, blah, blah. Like, it's, yeah, that room, the side room is, like, was for me super clutch when I was playing it this time.
Mm-hmm. Also worth noting for anyone who doesn't know, I don't know that would be super useful in this circumstance, but if you encounter a locked door and you're in a real hurry, if you shoot it with something that's not a pistol, the door will open. So when you're in a rush, just pull out your, you know, shotgun or SMG or assault rifle and just drop a couple bullets into it and the door will swing right open.
We're just giving all the tips today.
Yeah. I mean, I've still got one in the chamber that I've got to save for fucking a year because it's for an unlock from Haven Island.
Oh, okay, well...
It's a good tip, though. It's fucked up. Yeah. I don't know, like the four like mission stories in this one are pretty generic, really.
Yeah.
You could beat up a landlord, that's good. But otherwise it's just, you know, it's a job and it's
it's choose your fighter, right? Like if you're trying to be a good comrade, right? Like who do you side with, the landlord or the petty bourgeois? Well, technically they're both petty bourgeois, but the landlord or the store owner, right? Mm-hmm. Because you know that the guy, you know, it's not a worker cooperative.
True.
It's not, you know, he's not just, you know, an employee or something like that, right? Because there's the dialogue like, oh, it's your boss in. So, you know, choose your fighter.
You know what? I've got a solution. Kill them both.
Yeah, well, when your tip is, hey, pull out your shotgun, you can blow the door open. Like, yeah, you know, we're going that route.
What are you saying? I'm saying something about my play style.
This is usually my bit, right? Like, this is usually my angle, which is fine. I actually didn't, you know, I was sort of playing, I feel like, as intended. So I'm glad that you, like, preemptively, you just sensed, you know.
I mean, you do ultra-violence runs, which... It may sound like we're similar, but actually we're not. The difference is it's just a different kind of methodical on your part. Yeah. My part is I just like to get sloppy. I like to make a mess.
By the way, okay, I did something dumb before I realized how to do a challenge.
Mm-hmm.
Because I took your word for granted, Six. I was like, oh, the toilet one, how do you get that? And... it's easy. You just turn on the friggin' intercom and Zaydon comes in.
Mm-hmm.
You dump the toilet on him, you know.
Did you try to coin him there or something? What'd you do?
When I told you about this challenge, you were like, huh, I don't know. That sounds impossible. You must have to kill everybody and then then pull him under the toilet.
Oh, right. Yeah, I did see
that. Well, that's what I did. And it was interesting trying to play Hitman like that as like a shooter. Probably wouldn't do it again, but it was interesting, and I got it done, so whatever.
Yeah, good work. Yeah, I forgot that was before I messed with it myself, and I was like, oh, this is really easy, actually.
Yeah.
Yeah, which is funny, too, because I sort of like the bit about turning on the intercom and blasting the conversation. Like, that's like a fun moment. However, since you brought it up, I did find myself, wincing a little bit, specifically at the boundary setting of the basically of the where there's the metalworking on the not the railing but like where the solid wall gives way to the like lattice work of the second floor of the school, because you can shoot through that. However, like what hits the, you know, programmed, like, actual, like, structure that's there, right, that counts as, like, a wall, it does not always super cleanly match up with the, like, what you see. So if mm-hmm. you're trying to shooty-shooty in the school on the high difficulty, where you really can't take more than a couple of hits, where it is actually kind of challenging, I think, it's really annoying to lose a run when you shoot four shots that all, like, plink off of the, like, extended little... like trellis or whatever, and then you get doinked in return, you know, by a salvo from a person that should be dead. It's like, damn you. But again, yeah. That's not really like the primary mode of play, right? It's like something has usually gone horribly, horribly wrong, if that is relevant. But it's like I don't think I had encountered, at least in our playthroughs for this pod, the specific issue of the like, yeah, the semi-permeable like wall barrier, that type of a thing.
Yeah, I think my closest was when we did Sapienza and the icon with the like extra generous like protective hitbox on that guy's helmet.
Similar. That's a good point.
But do you want to talk about escalations?
Sure.
So there are three escalations. Two of them are set on Gilded Cage. One is on House Built on Sand. The Gilded Cage ones are fine. There's the Bahadur Dexterity, where you basically infiltrate the school as the headmaster and steal shit and murder people.
Mm-hmm.
There's the Igniative Integrity, where you're in the basement of the consulate doing shit. It's fine. You should really, like, if you are getting started on your Hitman career, if you don't already have a bunch of unlocks, you should really do the one that is for the house built on sand, the Chevo calibration. It is a fairly easy like stealth sniper challenge that awards you with a really good silent sniper rifle. That rifle made a lot of like sniper assassin challenges much easier for me before I was flush in unlocks, and now I have the fucking Season of Pride, like, gratuitous, like, silver bird wrapped around my rifle gun, which is stupid, but but yeah, not too many escalations here. I don't know, I feel like all of us here are like care less and less about escalations every time.
Yeah, so yeah. The further away we get from my argument that the escalations are good, the more I have hoisted myself. Because when I'm done with all the main stuff, I'm like, I get it, I load into an escalation, and I'm like, man, I don't want to fucking do this. And I just turn it off. So clearly I've been hoisted by my own petard here.
Yeah, I feel bad about the Battle Axe Headmaster one specifically, because there's a bit of dialogue when some guards are talking to each other in the default mission that is basically like, oh, you know, did he, you know, smack the crap out of you? It's like, no, he was, you know, gentle, nice guy. And I haven't encountered anything that would, you know, like contradict that or whatever. So he seems to be this generally like well-liked, like affable man, right? So, you know, having to murder him time after time after time, you know, as we ramp the levels up, I just kind of feel bad about it.
Yeah, that's fair.
I do like the more, I guess, generic escalations as far as they go, though, just because I'm still a little bit traumatized from the Paris speedrun escalation. So I guess, yeah. Like, that, and I tend not to enjoy the, like, kill timer ones. So having ones that were a little bit, like, looser, I don't know, is less annoying. But again, like, we're already shifting our, like, critical range to, like, what is more or less irritating that we do for the sake of completion or whatever. So that's not great, but
yeah,
they were fine.
I mean, you know, in 2.5 years when we get to Hitman 3, there are some what they call, like, premium escalations that are actually quite cool and fun, but we're a very long way away from that.
Yeah. Also, I mean, I'm assuming it's going to come to Steam by then, but I was ready to click the button and give them my money when I realized it, I think it's still currently an Epic exclusive, Epic Store exclusive. So I'm gotcha. Like, no, nope, we're waiting.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right, Ryan, do we have any questions?
We do. We have one, I believe. Let me get into the email, but I forgot.
I have a random, like, question while they pull that up. Mm-hmm. Is there any in, like, game reason given, like, through an overheard bit of dialogue, why there is that one soldier who patrols up and down the middle of the bazaar area between the hookah lounge and the embassy? There's the one guard who can see through the cameraman disguise. Why? Like, why does that guard have this, like, in specific information? I feel like there's a bit, but I just didn't have time to, like, uncover the, like, reason why. Or is it just there because, you know, gameplay, they want to maintain some tension, whatever. Did either of you encounter, like, an actual reason why?
I didn't encounter any explanation.
Okay. Sorry,
I just had a late run where I did the camera guy one again, and I was trying to get away from the guard, so I went around the very left side and came up behind the two reporters. And then when I did that, the guard saw me and was like, "What the fuck are you doing?" I'm like, "Whoa, whoa, 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 whoa.
I'm just standing. Hey. Bro. Just,
yeah."
Yeah, it almost feels like this belated, like, hey, in case you missed from Paris or whatever, the crowds mechanic, like, we're just going to remind you, right? Or something like that. But it's so random. But it's like one dude.
And the crowds mechanic was introduced in 2. In Hitman 1, which this mission came out in, you didn't have that option.
Good point. Although, again, with things being changed, I can't, you know, I don't think any of us could say for certain whether that guard, like, they could have for some bizarre reason, like, added that guard as an enforcer.
I mean, anyway. You know what? I'll edit it in. I can check. I own Hitman 1. Just Hitman 1. I'm
not asking you to spend the, you know, finite minutes of your existence. I will doing that.
Right here, I will edit in whether or not that guard is there in Hitman 1.
Okay.
So this is really fascinating. I checked it out on Hitman 1, and Ty is right. In fact, there is no patrolling guard through the marketplace in Marrakesh. However, that guard does exist, and he is stationed permanently in front of the journalists under the archway, so his position is actually more obnoxious for trying to get past him with the journalist disguise. Very interesting change. So that guard exists, but he's not patrolling. He's standing stationary exactly where you want to be.
I think you'll find that Six will do extra work regardless of what you say.
Not untrue.
All right, no agency either way, just as I like it.
Yeah, we have one email from Kyrie who says, one of the more frustrating elements of Hitman is the timing of certain assassinations. I remember doing the opportunity to be the target's massager, but I wanted to listen to the guy's whole speech on massage table. However, if you let the speech play out, the kill prompt goes away and he stands up from the table almost instantly. It's very frustrating because the challenge gets locked off unless you load a previous save. What elements of the World of Assassination trilogy do you find frustrating to deal with? And for those who play 2 and 3, do you feel there's a frustrating elements that they eventually figure out? The only timing-based thing I've had trouble with for this one is getting Zaydan and Strauss to meet up underground. I just did it too slow the first time. Wasn't really much of a pain to do the second time, just because I just knew the route. But that was the only thing I really had to do over.
Yeah, so the only other one that comes to mind that we've encountered in the playthrough so far is just the sort of specific. Basically, if you wanna get the Helmut Krueger disguise without basically, you know, without going to any of the work of, like, once he's in, you have to, you know, kind of make it out there, trigger the helmet entrance photo shoot, and do something on a fairly tight loop there. It's not exactly a parallel, but that's, like, the only, like, answer I could think of. That said, though, I totally get it, right? Like, you want to be able to sort of experience, you know, all of the flavor text and all of, you want to be able to soak in as much as possible with each run, but I feel like that's sort of getting back to, like, the premise of the game and its replayability, right? Like, there's something to be said for just, like, becoming the masseuse and then, like, letting him do his thing, right? And then dropping a moose on him or whatever. Like, just kind of going through replaying the game to, specifically to, like, figure out all these little bits and just, like, experience it. To me, that synergizes well with, like, what the game offers and how it encourages you to return to it. Yeah,
I feel like sometimes, like, I definitely have had moments where I've missed those opportunities, and I feel like some of the, like, more than this one, like, I think especially, Ty, you brought it up when we talked about in Sapienza, the icon mission, how a bunch of the, like, opportunities there are, like, incredibly timing specific of, like, when you need to hit the remote on pyrotechnics and stuff, or like shooting the cannon at the plane in Sapienza, which is, like, it's really easy to just fire and just have nothing happen and be like, okay. And that stuff is frustrating. However, sometimes I don't know that the solution they come up with later is much better. Like, it's different, but it has its own problems. Like, I can think of specific instances where you get, you know, a disguise and you get close to the person and you're just doing your thing, and then the game just sort of hangs in that moment indefinitely. And it feels like the target is being like, come on, are you going to kill me or what? Come on, it's murder time. And it just feels really artificial.
Yeah, I guess I don't mind that as much. Because then it's like, you know, I've gone through, I've sort of gained access to essentially like a game state that is more or less like a win condition, or at least for that part of the thing, right? And so for me, since it's like the end of the, it's the end of the shogi match or whatever, I don't mind being afforded the opportunity to just like take my, do whatever, right? Like I've beaten the thing I've achieved. But that's just like one way of looking at it for sure. And sorry, when I was interpreting like the sort of like annoying elements of like the timing based stuff, I was thinking like specifically to the, to the example that we got in the question of where it cuts off, whether it's like story reveal or just, like flavor stuff, something that you might also want to experience that, a pathway that is blocked, when you, trigger, do what the game is telling you to do. Also, I just like, sorry, this maybe it seems like a decent thing to mention. So you'll often hear people say that you should just play the game on the hardest difficulty no matter what, just because it makes like for the best, like the best experience in terms of like, tension, blah, blah, blah. And I don't think that's wrong. And also like in some sense, but I think there is something to be said for allowing yourself to just have your like mess around playthroughs where you're not going for points, you're not going for maximum, stories completed or achievements or whatever. Like tell yourself ahead of time, right? And lowering the difficulty can be a good incentive because you know you're going to get less out of it in terms of progression rewards and stuff. Just to soak in like what the level has to offer, right? And then when you maybe get more familiar with it, you're more, you've scratched those itches a little bit, then you can go ramp up the difficulty and start playing kind of for the points and for the progression. Just another way of doing it. But that I think is, it's not how I'm playing for the pod, but it's how I played when I was first playing.
That's interesting because so I always play on professional. Ty, you almost always play on master. I know in the past, Rai, you were doing a lot of casual.
I'm all easy all the time, baby. Let's go.
Yeah, so we
don't give me no cameras. it's not like the AI, like the AI still catches on to what you're doing.
Sure.
Like regardless of how sloppy you are at a certain point. So I haven't had anything where I'm like, this is so easy, I'm so bored. Mm-hmm. I still feel the tension there, and the level design is such, the level design carries it, right? Where the point to where like it is built in, like you need, it's going to be hard to get into this area because this barrier, whatever. Like I still feel that tension. I don't feel like I'm losing anything per se by playing it more on casual. I just feel like I have more room to mess around.
Yeah, I want to be really clear. I actually enjoy playing Hitman more on the lower difficulties. There is a specific reason that I'm playing for the pod almost exclusively on Master, whatever the highest is, and that is specifically because I am dealing with this unlock glitch where I've lost all my progress, and so when I'm playing like a concentrated run for the pod, right, to get ready, I just want to I want to get that access back as quickly as possible. And that's not a normal situation that most people are ideally going to find themselves in. So yeah, totally, just to like reinforce the validity, casual is valid. But seriously, having to deal with just more enforcers all over the map doesn't make things inherently like more interesting necessarily. Yeah.
And especially, I tried Master once, and just the limited saves is such a deal breaker for me, because this game can be buggy, and even when it's not buggy, it can be finicky, and I don't want to have to have like, well, I'm about to do this challenge and I'm not exactly sure how it's supposed to work. Do I want to spend my one save only to find out like, oh, it turns out I needed to do this beforehand or it wouldn't actually work or something.
Exactly. That's what I'm saying. The whole like creative play and exploration aspect of it, I don't think jives as well on Master. And that's why I really do encourage the like lower difficulty playthroughs, at least initially. Again, when you're not like min-max optimizing for efficiency with just points and all of that stuff, which I think is ultimately a fairly like shallow and limiting like way to engage with the game, not that anyone like says, oh, I'm just playing this game to unlock all this stuff, right? But like you get into that mentality kind of.
And I think there are some unlocks that are really fucking good, and you want them to open up more opportunities. And so, like, yeah, I mean, like, playing this game and never unlocking lethal poison would suck.
Damn, that would be a shitty
experience. So, yeah, this is we're about to do Colorado next. Folks, play
if... Wait, are we? I thought...
Oh, wait, no, you're right. You're right. I'm sorry.
It's India next.
Yes, my mistake. We're doing Bangkok next.
Is it Bangkok? Sorry, I forgot. Yeah.
It's Bangkok.
Yeah, it's Bangkok.
But when we do Colorado then, I guess, play until you get the card scramblers.
Mm-hmm.
You fucking need those.
I'm so excited to get, like, if the audience doesn't remember, I'm playing on a clear save. So, like, all these gadgets and gizmos y'all been bringing up, I'm like, well, I want that shit. And I'm so excited to finally get there in, like, 2 months or whatever.
Yeah, and again, it's one of those things, you can do every level, you can do pretty much everything in this game without the unlocks. It's that it dramatically opens up, like, what is possible, right? Mm-hmm. Like, not having to go to a very specific place and fulfill, like, you know, specific conditions, obtain specific game states to grant access in this way, like, with this key card or whatever. Yeah, just to be clear, like, it's not that they're strictly necessary, but they, again, it, I think, feeds into the type of, like, gaming experience that Hitman and the, you know, the trilogy does really well already. And it feels less than great to feel like you have to stick to a really rigid route for part of a run in a game that is otherwise, you know, giving you your dopamine hits when you go explore and, like, mess around and figure stuff out.
And I also feel like it recognizes that parts of the game that I think are good, but, like, parts of the game do with time become busy work, right? Mm-hmm. Like, getting inside the consulate eventually is not an issue. You know, a dozen ways to do that, you can do it without thinking, and it's just moving your fingers on the buttons for a while. So why not have a way to skip that and just get you straight inside?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Yep. Even better said, for sure.
But yeah, thank you for your questions. Or question in this instance. If you have any other, you know, questions, comments, the location we're currently covering or any past locations, for future locations, let's hold off for now. You can DM me if you want, because I've done everything, but otherwise wouldn't want to spoil folks on things. Next month.
baldgunguypod@gmail.com.
Yes, should have said that. Next month, we are covering Bangkok and Club 47? 27? It's Club something. I should have looked this up. Bangkok. I'm a professional. Club 27, as well as the Patient Zero mission, The Source, which is the first chronological mission in the Patient Zero bonus campaign. So that'll be fun.
I'm ready to fucking drum.
I remember Bangkok being a pretty cool level.
Yeah. Agreed.
So looking forward to that. Hey Ryan.
Hey.
Where can people find you on the internet?
I am at LewisRose430 on Twitter. Also on this website, Scanline Media, I did a near spoiler cast with Jen and Kat. You can listen to that as well as twitch.tv/simulationcat. We have an archive, it should still be up, of our near stream that we did. It's really dumb and fun. And yeah, if you want some dumb near lore goodness, check those out.
Good shit. Ty, where can people find you?
They can find me at Chaya_games, I'm told is an important distinction. That's Chaya_games on Twitter. I think that's good for now.
All right. You can find me at SixDetmar, SAXDETTMAR. You can find my work at scanlinemedia.com or patreon.com/scanlinemedia. And friends and folks, until we see you in Bangkok.
God damn it. I still don't have one.
I will leave you to prepare.
Is that it? Okay.
Take sure,
it
why not? Peace.